thanks for joining us on this first episode back of Against the Mountains of Madness. John and I thought this week we'd talk about Always Coming Home, the story of how we wound up in the Catholic Church. So, John, I guess I'll go first.
Go right ahead.
So where
did you start out with first?
So where did I start?
What put your foot on the path?
No, that's fair. So I was raised an agnostic by my parents. I mean, they sent me to Sunday school a little bit to get some teaching, some morals, but my parents aren't church-going individuals. My parents are great. I love my parents. I'm not going to say anything bad about them, but they didn't raise me in any particular religious tradition, and in my teen years, in the typically self-assured and angsty way that only a teenager can, I became an atheist. I thought I was wise and smart to have this shallow and childish insight. And that's maybe too harsh. And I tried to live like that through my teen years, from about sort of 14 or 15 to age 18. I was cursed, you might say, with a somewhat reflective spirit, and I discovered, unsurprisingly, atheism is completely unlivable, shall we say.
Mm-hmm.
There's no meaning, no purpose, no nothing to existence, no point to existence, no point to life. You could say I suppose I would comfort myself with the idea of meaning is what you make it, or life is what you make of it, and you can invent your own meaning. My marijuana use would suggest that wasn't working for me particularly well, but that was rough. But you know, and a friend from high school in year 12, doing my HSC, which I think is similar to your SATs. It's basically the exam you take at the end of school and you use it for university admission.
Right.
A friend from school who I'd mocked on, James, who I'd mocked on a number of occasions for being a Christian, ironically enough, invited me to church. And there were girls there, so I went. I am definitely not the only person that has done that. And then at my first night going to church for the first time, which was a weird experience, I wasn't sure what to make of it, they were all talking about how they were off for a week to a study camp to study for the HSC, and invited me along, and this was like the following day. And I rang my parents and discussed it, and they were like, yeah, that's fine, because you need to study for the HSC, and that'll be good for you. So here I was, 18 years of age, with a bunch of complete strangers going off to a study camp with a bunch of Christians for the first time, which included some Bible study during the week and things like that, which was all very weird, and I didn't know what was going on. But about midway through the week, because there was a quiet reflection time, and I had taken to wandering off into the nearby bush and sitting on a rock, and I don't know why, but I was quietly sitting on a rock trying to make sense of the Book of Titus that we were studying that week, and was struck by an overwhelming sense of all of this is true and you need to learn more. It was a weirdly profound experience. And I sort of wandered into the bush, an atheist, I guess, and wandered out of the bush, convinced there was something to this, if not actually a Christian at that point, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
And started going to church regularly and chasing it and studying it from there. And that was an Anglican church. And I was there for many years until I met my first wife, and we had a home break-in, and I dropped out of university and I needed a job and I had to work on Sundays. So I moved to her church, which had a later service that I could get to. But yeah, that was how I became a Christian. That got me on the road. That strange, overwhelming experience in the bush. I mean, some people might interpret that as, oh, you know, it's a blind faith, you don't. But it's not that at all, because I've been driven to look into sort of the evidence and the history and make sense of it and make sure it's rational and reasonable.
Yeah.
It was just, I think it would be fair to say, I wasn't open to it, the idea of it being rational and reasonable until that time. And that sort of pushed me over the edge to actually seriously consider Christianity as a live option instead of dismissing it as all of the usual ridiculous nonsense you hear from atheists about it, you know, weak-minded and a crutch and false and made up and just all of the usual nonsense.
I am most familiar with that nonsense. So if you want to segue, I will tell how I became a Christian.
Well, I was just gonna finish up.
Go ahead.
The problem with the way I came to Christ is at this point in time, whenever I hear people talking of being an atheist, and then they start talking about why, to my ears, it always sounds like you're an angsty teenager. He doesn't know what they're talking about. And I can't escape that. It's just...
And I hate to say it, it's often an angsty teenager who doesn't get along with his father. That's not true in my case, but that's true in a lot of cases.
It's not true in my case either, but they always... So because of when I was an atheist and the sort of silly things I believed and the sorts of silly things I hear atheists say, they always strike me as angsty, childish teenagers. And I can't help it, because when I was an atheist, I was a childish, angsty teenager that believed all sorts of stupid things that have no bearing on reality. I didn't know what I was talking about, and I would talk, I would blather on confidently about stuff I knew nothing about, I had no understanding of, and was dismissive of things I didn't understand. But,
yes.
I mean, I guess that works for the devil.
Greetings, world. This is John C. Wright. I and my compatriot, Jason Rennie, take up arms weekly against the mountains of madness that are afflicting and overwhelming the modern age. You are welcome here among like-minded souls, and I hope we have provided a work of insight, hope, or humor, and perhaps an explanation of the insanity that is the modern age. For more content and conversation on these and other fascinating topics of philosophy, science fiction, and current events, please visit our Substack at atmom.substack.com. Tips, bribes, and generous patronage are warmly encouraged. Thank you.
So
now, in my case, I continued to be dismissive of things I didn't understand well into my 30s and 40s. So here's my story, if I can keep it brief.
So you're 10, my, hang on, sorry. So you're 10 years older than me, but I've been a Christian longer than you. But you've been a Catholic longer than me. Anyway,
I may have misremembered the dates. I'm not good with
dates. No, that's fine.
So I was raised in a Lutheran home. My parents were not particularly religious. At age 7, I was a very logical young tyke, and I asked my dad why we have to go to church and what the reasoning was behind it and why I had to wear a tie, because I figured if God was everywhere and omnipotent, he didn't need us to wear a tie. So to my surprise and enduring glory, I actually talked my dad out of going to church at age 7. Now, I asked him about this later. I said, there's no way a 7-year-old child could talk a grown-up out of anything. He said no, that he had been in grave doubts about the religious life for a long time. He was raised in an orphanage. His granddad became Lutheran only to get him into the orphanage, only because it was convenient. He didn't actually ever believe it himself. And dad just went through the motions because that was what was expected of him. He never actually thought about it. He was a very rational person, very pragmatic person, and his rationality and his pragmatism did not mesh well with the Christians he met from rural Pennsylvania, for example. So we stopped going to church when I was 7. So I was an atheist from that until quite recently. And I was not just your run-of-the-mill atheist. I was a vituperative, evangelizing, crusading atheist who was out to abolish superstition and the vexations of the Christians from all of life. Now, I have to say, I think I was, if I can blow my own horn, I think I was a little more rational about my atheism than most atheists are. Pride was, of course, involved, as was teenage angstiness, and as was the thought that I knew what I was talking about, which I did not. But it's either. You know what I'm saying? I didn't believe in Thor or Allah or the gods of the East or anything else. Didn't believe anything supernatural. But to my credit, I also did not fall into the nihilism of believing that I didn't have free will or that there was no such thing as the moral code that runs the universe. If anything, I was someone who followed the code of the Stoics, whom I greatly admired, the ancient Romans, who taught that you should always do your duty, whether it was to your benefit or not, and that the only thing you can control in life is your own emotions, your own mind, your own passions, that you can't actually control whether you live or die, so you should hold that to be neutral, which should not concern you. You can't control whether you're rich or poor, so that also should be of no great concern to you, you see. Now, at the same time, I was also raised to be a libertine kind of libertarian fellow who believed, as many of my generation did, that anything was licit as long as it did not harm another. Anything to which one consented was licit, in the sexual areas or anywhere else. So I had no problem with homosexuality or anything. Until a day came when my fellow atheists started going crazy on me. It was round after 9/11, and my fellow atheists, four of them, became quite popular and famous. I would have been thrilled at any previous time to have popular and famous atheists, people on my side, because I felt quite alone. I thought I was the only atheist around, you see. And I didn't count Marxists because I thought they were basically religious. You know, that they just had an atheist version of religion, but they were still mystical crackpots. They weren't logical.
Yep.
Well, my fellow atheists, who I thought had the hammerlock on logic, said, any passion that you want to indulge, no matter what the consequences are, is licit. And I said, well, wait a minute. That's not what the Stoics say. The Stoics say do your duty whether you want to or not. They say control your emotions. Because I had been a big fan of, like, Mr. Spock from Star Trek. I wanted to be logical. I wanted to be a rational man because I thought reason was the only way to understand reality. But my fellow atheists began to doubt whether reality existed. They talked with quite seriousness about how truth was relative and how morality was a matter of opinion or a matter of social conditioning. And I was like, I'm sorry, no one conditioned me. I don't obey the laws of what society says is right and wrong. I follow my own course. My fellow atheists started to do things like they tried to get the unbelievably microscopic cross removed from the top of an image of a Spanish mission in the city seal of San Diego. And I was living in California at the time. I was born and raised in California. And if you know anything about California history, the Spanish missions were the people who colonized the place. Half our history is Spanish. Half the names of the cities are Spanish names. San Diego, Los Angeles, and so on and so forth. So for my fellow atheists to want to remove that because that would, what, cast a magic spell and turn us into Christians against our will? But I was an atheist. I didn't believe in magic. They wanted to get In God We Trust off the money. I said, why? What does that matter to you at all? Unless you believe that symbols have power over people's minds. Unless you believe in magic words. So it just got worse and worse. So I began to seriously ponder. And I started reading C.S. Lewis to see if there was any merit to the Christian worldview. I started reading G.K. Chesterton. Now, at the time, I was living with a coven of witches, and when I asked them about what they believed about the afterlife, about the nature of morality, about the objectivity of truth, they gave me very flaccid and unsatisfying answers. Like they hadn't thought about what happens with life after death. Like it never crossed their mind. And I said, you know, and so my opinion of Christianity was absolutely rock bottom. There was no one for whom I had more contempt, and I'm sorry to say that nowadays, but it was true. But after this conversation with some of my pagan friends, I realized that the Christians at least had a worldview. They at least knew the answer to the question of what happens when you die, where does the good come from, why is the universe coherent, why is the universe logically constructed, where does beauty come from, things like that, see?
Mm-hmm.
Now, the events came to a mental crisis with me because I realized that my libertine libertarianism and my stoicism could not coexist. You can't both say your emotions are paramount and say logic is paramount regardless of emotion, right?
Of course.
So, and I began to read people like C.S. Lewis and G.K. Chesterton who did not hold that. They said God is paramount and reason and emotion both have their roles within that worldview. And I began to really like them. I fell in love with them because they seemed sane and normal and decent to me.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas my fellow atheists seemed like gibbering lunatics. I mean, poop-flinging monkeys. They seemed so bad. They didn't seem like me. They didn't seem like creatures of pure logic who didn't believe in God because there was insufficient evidence, or because the notion of God seems logically incoherent, because how can you be benevolent and omnipotent and omniscient and allow for pain in the world? That doesn't seem logical. How can you be able to act if you can foretell the future? If you're omnipotent, wouldn't any action you perform be instantaneous to you? You know, why would you need to do anything, since you could have everything you wanted instantaneously? And so on and so forth. I had all the same arguments that you've heard from all the atheists throughout time and space. I mean, it's not like I had a new atheist argument. There are no new atheist arguments. These are the same arguments being made in ancient Greece, you know, in 5th century BC.
No, I saw the Amazing Atheist? Who's been around for years. One of the atheist YouTubers that used to be big, and he posted a tweet that said, Christianity is nonsense, Islam is false. He was ruder than that, it were expletives. But he rubbished a bunch of religions, and then someone asked, but females can have a penis? And he goes, yup. Would this be similar to what crazier probably
nothing,
your experience,
nothing
but that.
Nothing that extreme. But it was extreme enough for me to realize that my fellow atheists had lost their minds. They didn't believe in truth, logic, and reality. They thought reality was optional. Okay?
Yeah.
They were nihilists, basically. Or they were atheists because God didn't give them a pony when they prayed when they were young, which is not a reason that I regard as legitimate. Okay.
No, it's not.
Or they simply told lies about the past. Like Christopher Hitchens, in order to support his atheism, simply has to make stuff up. That's not the way a logical person acts. That's not the way an honest person acts. That's not the way an honorable person acts.
It's the way a power-seeking one does, though.
It's the way a liar acts, okay? It's the way a man of despicable man of no honor acts, okay? And it's not the way a Vulcan acts, because we do not say the thing which is not. That's not the way the Houyhnhnm from Gulliver's Travels acts. We don't say the thing which is not. So events came to a head when I realized that my fellow atheists were preaching a form of sexual morality, and sex was the big topic in my youth, which didn't conform with reality. It didn't conform with prudent self-regard. It didn't conform with family life. Mm-hmm. And you need families to raise kids, because otherwise they're raised as orphans, as my dad was. And so I didn't need anyone to convince me that families are better than non-families. Okay. So I talked to two of my friends who were Christians. Both of them said sex outside of marriage was licit and allowable. One of them said if you love the person, if you love your partner, if you love your mate, and the other one said not. The other one said it's allowable as a matter of entertainment. So in order to shock this person who was saying something clearly against his own religion, I said, are you telling me that sex is like mixed doubles tennis? It's merely a sport that you indulge in that requires two sexes? Now, I thought he was going to go, oh, no, I couldn't say that. That's outrageous. That's blasphemy. No, he didn't say that. He said yes. And I was shocked.
Yep.
And I looked up at the naked heavens, and I said, dear empty heavens, holy God in whom I do not believe. I didn't actually say that, but let's just say I did. I said, how in the world could my friend, this is one of my close friends, this guy had been a roommate in college and all sorts of stuff. I mean, very, very tight with me. Well, not a roommate in college, but that level of friendship. Who robbed him of romance? Everything from Job and Juno, Minnie and Mickey Mouse, Romeo and Juliet, every love story, every love song, every marriage ever made, someone has stolen from him.
Hmm.
He can't even understand the glory of the male and female mating dance, the wonder and the mystery and the heartache and the pain and the loss and the thrills of falling in love and wooing a woman and carrying her over the threshold and seeing her dressed as a bride, and all that stuff is gone because he doesn't believe in it. He just thinks sex is mutual masturbation, which is about the most disgusting thing I can think of. I was physically revolted. This is a guy who said he was a Christian. And I said to him, listen, not only does your God say otherwise, but so does Allah and Confucius and the Buddha and the witches of the Norse, because the Viking religion, you would think would not say this, says that the adulterers are thrown into Nastrond, their flaming hell, okay? And the Greeks and Romans, the Romans would bury a Vestal Virgin who betrayed her oath of virginity, bury her alive. One of the more painful and disgusting deaths that you can imagine. Everyone knows this is wrong. It's inescapable knowledge. How can you not know it? And I looked up at the blank heavens and I said, who has robbed my friend? And my sense of logic, very much against my will and very much against my inclination, said, contraception. I said, what? How could contraception be to blame for lowering the moral hazard of the sex act? But it could not be anything else. It wasn't anything else. So I looked around my mental landscape, and I said, who is it that agrees with me that contraception is a grave moral evil? And I should emphasize that I came to the conclusion just from a purely logical standpoint, just as a matter of prudential concern for how to organize your sexual passions so as not to cause the harm of bastardy or creating an orphan. Or worse yet, killing a child in the womb, which I always thought was ever since I had kids, I realized that kids were people, okay? So, the Roman Catholics. I said, are you kidding me? The crazy, insane Christians who believe in Santa Claus, who believe this world, which clearly arose out of nothing by purely natural prophecies, is a created thing, who think that they're godlike in their image and likeness. They're the insane people who are responsible for every war that ever existed. No, excuse me, I didn't believe that at the time. Even I was not that stupid. I said, how come the crazy Christians be correct on this point? And worse, the most conservative, the most crazy, the most superstitious Christians at all. How was it possible? So I said, I'm going to have to look into this. There may be something to their worldview. I do like C.S. Lewis and I do like G.K. Chesterton, and they talk like reasonable, they talk like sane men. And the guys on my side, my people, whose uniform I wear and under whose banners I march, are crazy as bedbugs. They're freakingly insane. And this was before the phrase woman's penis was invented.
Yeah.
Years and years before.
Yeah.
So I tried reading Thomas Aquinas, thinking that if anyone could convince me, he could. And I had read him in school. I had read him in college. And I remember thinking at the time that he made a fundamental error in his reasoning right at the beginning. When I reread him, that error wasn't there. I realized that I had been in error by making an assumption, a logical assumption I shouldn't make, about the nature of cause and effect and the nature of the hierarchy of reality.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I said, huh, that's funny, huh? I'm a perfectly logical being, but I made a mistake in my logic. Oh, and during my conversation with my Christian friends, one of them said, what could convince you that God was real? If an archangel appeared in front of you with a halo and a flaming sword and the book of the law tucked under his arm, surrounded by a host of singing cherubim, would that convince you? And I said, no, it would not. He said, well, why not? I said, well, I know God doesn't exist, so I would assume that anything I saw was hallucination, was a delirium, was a dream.
Mm.
Now,
convenient.
Convenient. Now, my sense of logic snuck up on me and said, wait a minute, Mr. Wright. My sense of logic is very formal, it's very polite to me. I said, what is it? What is it, sense of logic? It says, that's a circular argument. You're assuming the conclusion you want to prove. I said, no, wait a minute. My logic is completely coherent, and there's no self-contradictions in anything. I've checked every link in my chain of reasoning, one link at a time, and I start from the assumption there's no God, and I come to the conclusion there's no God. Wait a minute, I'm wrong. I as a perfectly logical being, I've made another mistake. Now, instead of blowing myself to pieces like Nomad on the Star Trek episode where the perfectly logical computer realizes it's mistaken, I tried to reprogram myself. I just tried to read Thomas Aquinas. It was too thick. I read the first four pages, and it took me a week. And then I looked at the unread pages in my other hand, endless, endless fields of gray text, and I said, if there is a God, and if he is merciful, he does not expect people to read Thomas Aquinas from cover to cover to find out whether he exists or not. He would make some easier, quicker method of finding out that he existed. He'd have some sort of method, I'm not even sure what it could be, where you would intuitively know or something like that, but that's impossible. But, you know, how could that happen? So, it was Thanksgiving when everyone in America was giving thanks to God. And my wife, who is Christian, and by the way, she prayed for me, and I have had many arguments with her over the years, browbeating her mercilessly, but her sense of logic never failed. Her worldview was also coherent, and that kind of impressed me, even though I didn't agree with the premises. It's sort of like non-Euclidean geometry. If you don't assume play for his axiom, you still get to conclusions that So I said, okay, I can't reason my way out of the circular argument I'm trapped in. And I can't think of any way, of any evidence that God could give me to prove he exists, because I would reject it. You know, because I don't think he's a coherent concept. I think he's like A equals not A. I don't think he's logical. Mm-hmm. Or that the concept of God is an understandable concept, understandable human beings. So I said, okay. I looked around. And I had just been to church for like, you know, once a year I go to church to please my wife, because I wanted my kids raised to be Christian, because my kids were too young to understand that you shouldn't steal because you don't live in a society where stealing is licit. My kids, however, were young enough to understand that there's a big sky father who will punish you if you steal, and I didn't want them to steal. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does.
Very practical for an atheist. So I got down on my knees. I said, Dear God, I know you don't exist. I can prove it with the same mathematical certainty as Euclid can prove that the Pythagorean theorem. But, just in case I'm wrong, as a philosopher, I have to admit, as a matter of honor, as a point of honor, I have to admit that it's possible for me to be wrong, as amazing as that seems. It's possible that there's an error in my logic, as unusual as that would be. So there must be some way you can prove that you exist to me, and prove it so overwhelmingly that I won't be able to deny it, that I won't be able to reject
it. That was a mistake.
Oh, I was sticking a fork into a light socket. I had no idea what I was doing. I was experimenting, and like Frankenstein, and the experiment came to life. So I said, either you don't care if I am damned, in which case you are not benevolent, therefore not God, or you lack the power to create evidence for me, in which case you're not omnipotent, therefore not God, or you lack the foresight to see how it could be done, in which case you're not omniscient, in which case not God. In either case, unworthy of my worship in any case. Thanking you in advance for your cooperation. So I got up and dusted off my knees and said, Honor is satisfied. I have now an empirical proof to show that God does not exist, and the prayers go unanswered.
Uh-oh.
The next day, I had a heart attack, who had not even been in ill health. I was dying. I was in excruciating pain, writhing on the floor, covered with sweat. And I said to my wife, who's a Christian scientist, they have a healing ministry, I said, either get me to the emergency room or call one of your practitioners. She called a practitioner. The guy prayed for me. The heart attack stopped. Like that. The moment he said the prayer. Now, Christian Science practitioners make their living, make their money, by saying prayers for people and healing them. Their rates of success are slightly better than those of doctors. If you look into it statistically, okay? This is a guy who says... this is like a mechanic who says, I can fix your car for $20 if you let me fix your car. So here's a guy who says, I can cure your sickness by prayer if you'll cooperate, you know, and I can do it. And he did it. So I said to my atheist self, wait a minute, that looks a lot. And I was not hurt at all. The pain was entirely gone. I said, that looks a lot like a miracle, but that can't be a miracle because I know miracles don't exist. That must have been a coincidence. And then I said, I'd really like to have more coincidences like that in my life if I could. That's kind of, you know, startling. So I said to the wife, I said, let's go to the hospital anyway. I want to find out what had been wrong with me. I thought maybe it was an attack of pleurisy or something. So they go to the hospital and they examine me and they say, you have 5 clogged arteries in your heart. I said, I didn't even know I had 5 arteries in my heart. I thought I only had 4. And then they said, no, you should be dead. There's, we can't explain why you're not dead. I said, okay. So
wow.
They say, we're going to keep you overnight. And we're gonna cut you open like a pig in the morning and to poke around in your innards, you know. So I said, fine, sure, that sounds good to me. So I was sitting there thinking and pondering as to how a miracle could happen in a world where there's no possibility of miracles. And as I was pondering and meditating, and I should say I was not in any pain at that point. They did not give me any drugs or anything. I was in clear and in my right mind, in my right wits. I became aware that I had a soul. I could see it. I could suddenly feel it intuitively, immediately. Not through any sense perception. Your senses can fail you. You can, if you stick a stick in the water, it might look bent, okay? If you hear a noise that's echoing strangely, mm-hmm. You might think it's coming from your left when it's coming from your right. But not something that's inside you that you know by knowledge, by pure immediate apperception. So I said, how can I have a soul? I'm an atheist. I know souls don't exist. That can't be. I believe in the truth, but I don't believe in God. And in my mind, I could see the truth turn and look at me and address me like it was a person. The thing I had been serving all my life, the truth, turned out to be alive. Okay? That was a little startling to me.
Fair enough.
To say the least. And the Holy Spirit was poured into my soul like wine into a dirty cup. And I feel like a physical sensation that accompanied the spiritual reality. And I sudden, and it was not like God came in front of the jury box of my reason and said, here's the evidence that I exist, here's the evidence that I don't exist, weigh in your mind. No, the intuitive knowledge, the perfect knowledge that came suddenly to me was exactly what I had been praying for and thought could not happen. So the Holy Spirit came to visit me. Then I had a vision. Then the Virgin Mary came to talk to me. She asked me why her son had been killed. She said other things to me that I will not repeat because she asked me not to repeat them to other people. Then I saw God, like a light that existed in all places and times and fills all time and space and is infinitely shedding ecstasy and pure pleasure and love and glory in all directions all the time. Again, not on drugs, not in any pain, I was in my right wits, in my right mind. I was oriented as to time, place, and person. Okay? Now, mm-hmm. I have known people. I have a brother-in-law who is afflicted with hallucinations, who suffers from a manic depression. So I know that bizarre things can happen inside someone's head, but they usually have certain symptoms or signs. None of the signs are present in my case. I took the time to look into it. So then Christ came to talk to me. And he terrified me beyond the capacity for rational thought. I know you Christians love your Christ, but he scares me. Because he looked at me and he said, God judges no man. God will never condemn you. I will be your judge at the end of time. I will judge you. And I said to myself, wait a minute. This has got to be a hallucination or a dream. Because there's no way. I know the Christian God is judgmental. He flooded the world in the time of Noah. He judges people all the time. This can't be right. After I got out of the hospital, when I was reading the Bible, which I thought I should read, now that the Holy Spirit was living inside me, I came across a passage in the book of John that said it almost word for word. I think I had one word different from the translation I read. And I said, huh, how in the world did I psychically perceive the writing in a book that I had never read and have a hallucination where those words were repeated to me word for word with one word wrong? If this was all that heart attack was triggered by me deliberately trying to make myself believe in God, and then I hallucinated all these things, but I didn't hallucinate a God I would have liked to serve, like Thor, because then I could go out and burn things and kill people and do other fun stuff. No, now I'm in this religion where you turn the other cheek. Are you out of your mind? Why, you know, someone said to me, "Oh no, your religion is just you psychologically. It's wish fulfillment." I said, "This religion does not fulfill any wishes I have ever had."
Okay. Yeah, I know, right?
I am not a turn-the-other-cheek kind of guy. Okay, I'm sorry. I love pride. I'm proud of being proud. And now I have to be humble, as Christ was humble.
Hmm.
So, after having a miracle cure, the visitation by the Holy Spirit, miracle visitations by the Father and the Son and the Holy Ghost and the Virgin Mary, and not to mention some other things I also saw. About a month later, I had another religious experience where I was taken outside my body and shown the structure of time and space, and the philosophical problem of determinism versus free will was shown to me, and I saw the mind of God, which was more complicated than anything I can put into words, and more pure and more perfect and more good, and that was weeks after this. There's even if you thought that maybe I had been exposed to, you know, gamma radiation while I was in the hospital, this is weeks and weeks later. So an atheist friend of mine once quizzed me about these various events, these various religious experiences, ecstasies, visions, miracles, and so on and so forth. Now, I'm not even going to bother mentioning all the times prayers since then have been answered, and sometimes immediately and sometimes outrageously. Okay?
Mm.
I got all the evidence I wanted. It was poured over my head like a bucket. I should not have asked. It was really a bad idea. Any person who was not stupid could have simply looked out the window and seen the organization and the beauty of nature and seen that birds have wings for a purpose, and nothing can have a purpose unless there's a mind to give it purpose. Nothing can be deliberate unless there's a deliberator. The bird did not decide that the wing would be the proper organ to let him fly. You know? So, I don't feel like I was singled out for any special reason, but it was a road to Damascus moment. It was absolutely God decided to pick the guy who hated him the most. I don't even know if I hated him the most. These other atheists were a lot worse than I was. It's no merit of mine. God works in mysterious ways, and I'm just kind of embarrassed that I had to be clocked over the head by a 2x4 before I could see something that was so obvious. You know, that had been living inside me the whole time. And once the Holy Spirit is inside you, you're kind of aware of it in the back of your mind, the way you can kind of hear a ticking clock in a quiet room. You know.
Yep.
So that's my conversion story. Maybe a little later in the podcast, I'll tell you why I became a Catholic as opposed to something else.
Yep. No, that's fair.
The moral of the story is be careful what you wish for.
Oh, yeah. Like, I mean, I've heard that sort of story before of I ask God, if you're really there, show me you exist. Like, that is...
Well, it's worse than that. I said, show me you exist in a way that is so clear and so plain that it's absolutely undeniable.
Yeah.
Which he then did, but in a way I can't show anyone else.
Well, there you go. But it's...
No one else was in the room. No one else saw it.
Hmm. But it's
he just
like
made the universe. If the universe is not evidence enough for you, then, you know, what are you going to do? Isn't that big enough? Yeah. Isn't that obvious enough? It's all around you.
Well, so. It's like you said, it's sticking a fork into a live socket. Like, it's just, it's the...
So
I mean,
stupid.
It's profound, and it's the right thing to pray, but it's just the dumbest prayer imaginable.
Oh, you're so right. Oh my gosh, it was dumb. Boys and girls, don't do what I did at home, okay? Just read G.K. Chesterton, read God in the Dock by C.S. Lewis. His arguments are perfectly sound. And you know that such a thing is good and evil because you act that way every moment of every day of your life. And if it came from society, then we would not have any ability to criticize society. But we do. So we know there's a higher law than the laws men make. And nature can't make laws. Nature can obey laws, but it can't make them. If there's a moral law, which is higher than human law, then there's a legislator who's not human, who's higher than human. QED.
So, the second part of the story is how I went from being a Protestant Christian to being a Catholic Christian. Well, it's interesting. You play a part in that story among some other people. So I started podcasting after I'd become a Christian. I'd been a Christian for about 7 or 8 years at that point, and I started listening to podcasts when they came out and decided I'd try my hand at it, and ended up starting the Sci-Fi Show. And did that for a while, and I did an interview with you, which was fascinating. And I spent time talking to atheists and Christians and other people in the interview capacity. And then eventually, the Sci-Fi Show became Sci-Fi Journal, and I started buying stories from people. And interestingly, so I should back up slightly. Early on, when I became a Christian, I heard all of the usual stories from that Protestants tell about Catholics, how Catholics aren't really Christians, they're heretics, they preach another gospel of works, and they've forsaken Christ, and all the usual stuff.
And if I may, and they lock up the Bible, and they cause wars, and they worship Mary.
I mean,
right.
They want to add Mary to the Trinity. All this sort of stuff. And I didn't know any better. And I thought, okay, well, I guess I'll stay away from that. And then I met some Catholics when I started doing... I'd never really met Catholics before back at university or anything. But when I started Sci-Fi Journal... I discovered you through Vox's blog, and I read some of your writings and quite liked them, and I thought, oh, you'd be interesting to talk to. And then I started buying stories, and you sold me that wonderful story of aliens that come to Earth chasing why their sun exploded because it turned out to be the Star of Beth. I love that story. That's just such a great story. But also in the same journal, I bought a story from... an author I didn't know named Josh Young, who we're friends now, a story about a story of a Catholic priest talking to a robot, and just a conversation between. But I started meeting all of these Catholics. I met Peter Sean Bradley, and who's a lawyer from California, who I bought a story from. And just all of these people that were Catholics. Daniel Vecchio, I bought an article from, who's a Catholic philosopher, who I'm good friends with now, and I've interviewed in a different capacity. And what happened? I met all of these different Catholics, and they seemed to be Christians. You laugh, but I mean, I'd been told these people preach a gospel of works and have forsaken Christ and were basically modern day Pharisees and all of these sorts of untruths, and they worship Mary and, well, they elevate Mary to deity and all this sort of stuff. And yet these people were all struck me as faithful Orthodox Christians. They weren't off the reservation at all. They were very. Oh, and I also encountered the writings of Peter Kreeft. I love Peter Kreeft's writings. They were profoundly influential, and he is a deeply, deeply ecumenical man. So I moved from. Well, the Catholic Church is clearly a false Christianity that's departed from the truth. To. After meeting a whole bunch of Catholics and reading some of their writings and discovering Thomas Aquinas and just being blown away by St. Thomas, who I never would have called St. Thomas at the time. That's silly, I don't do that. And he definitely would have gone along with the reformers.
Sounds like what happened to me with my atheist friends.
I moved to a different position, I guess, where I had to say, well, Catholics can be Christians too. And that was a bit of a struggle, because, of course, it started out with, well, some of these Catholics are obviously Christians, but obviously most of them aren't. They're you know, church and Easter types. We don't like them among us conservative Protestants. But it kept creeping up on me. And then I watched the Protestant churches go insane. Well, the Protestant churches were just getting worse and worse, and they were embracing all sorts of evil. And I mean, like, I know conservative Protestants will say they've become apostates, and I was like, that's fine, that's true, but they all seem to be doing it, and they all seem to be moving in this direction. What is pushing them away? You actually made an influential comment, which I think you made earlier, but that struck me at the time, was I looked around at all of the different churches, and the Catholics were the same ones. Like, you know, they were they were pro-life, and they were anti-contraception and all of this sort of stuff. And I was like, that's a good point. So I bimbled along, and I tried to I moved away from Sydney. I moved further out and had to find a new church.
Keep in mind, if you said about him, he's going
to
hear you.
Tried a Baptist church, and a Brethren church, and the Anglican
good.
Church is up here,
good
but the Anglican church is up here, or either. The good Anglican church was a long way away, and the local Anglican church. The Anglican church is within a longish walk from my house.
Right.
Is. Let's just say the minister regularly makes it into the paper for touting every left-wing evil you could imagine. By all accounts, he's a nice guy, but there is no left-wing evil he will not promote. I don't care. That's fair. I'm happy to say it about him. I think the guy's an apostate, but apparently he's a nice guy. Some people, I've never met him, but I wouldn't darken his church door. So I started flitting from church to church in my area, and didn't go to church for a few years. And I kept reading my Bible and I kept praying, but I was trying to find a church, and that none of them were really fitting. One of them just wasn't a good fit. I mean, there was nothing wrong with the church. I think the members there were faithful. It just didn't fit at all what I was looking for. I tried the local Baptist church, and that seemed a bit wonky, and I eventually went to one of the local Presbyterian churches, mm-hmm. and that was all right for a while. And then finally, one of the ministers there started... Well, actually, I should back up slightly. My first wife passed away rather suddenly. That's okay. It was 5 years ago now. Thank you. Sorry. And that was a rough time for a lot of reasons that I won't go into. And my church at the time was very helpful and very good, and we did a service and buried her and everything. I mean, it was like, I can't fault them. Then I met my current wife, going to work. I'd looked around at a bunch of the other churches in the area, and they'd already been unsuitable for various reasons. And I thought, well, I've met all these Catholics over the years, and they seem pretty good. All right. And I talked to Peter, my lawyer friend in California, and I talked to you as well briefly, and I was like, so what's involved in joining the Catholic Church? Because I just assumed, because every Protestant church I've been to, basically, you turn up and as long as you go regularly, that makes you a member. I mean, like, there's no formal initiation or membership requirements. You basically just turn up. And so I discovered it wasn't quite that simple with the Catholic Church, so I reached out to St. Patrick's, my local church, and Chris got in contact with me from the church and said, oh, we've got the RCIA?
Yes, right.
I forget what that's for. The right of Christian initiation of adults?
Of adults, right.
So that's fine. So I do this course, and then I go through. So I started attending the church. I started going to Mass once a week. I didn't take communion. You're not allowed to take communion if
you're not allowed.
I'd sit up the back and I'd listen and I'd kneel and actually the first week I walked into the church, they had a large picture someone in the congregation had painted, not in the sanctuary at the back, but down off the front as decoration of Mary. So here I was, a lifelong Protestant, finally going to a Catholic church, and walked in, and there was a big picture of Mary right in the middle of the church in front of the altar. I was like, what the? Oh, my goodness. That's everything I was told was true. Hang on, that's probably not it. And I asked Father Greg about it, because he would come along to some of the RCIA course things, and I went, oh, when I first walked in, it was like this, as he was, it was shocking, and I wasn't sure what to make of it. And he laughed, and he said, oh, no, it was just decoration. It would never be allowed in the holy area. It was just decoration at the front. And he thought it was hilarious that I had been so taken aback by this, and it's fine. It was, but I was like, I was just swayed. Like, that sort of made me go, okay, so this isn't what I thought it was. I'd also learned earlier from learning about the Orthodox Church that icons and veneration are not worship and is not idolatry. That these are very distinct things. They could become that, I suppose, if you were doing it wrong, but it's definitely not idolatry. It's definitely not... Veneration is not worship, and a statue or a painting is not idolatry, because none of them... You're not representing God, except in the case of Jesus, but you're only representing Jesus in his physical form. I think that's reasonable. But anyway, I went along to the church. I did the course... 3 Easters back, I had my first communion, and the Catholic Church has been amazing. Like, this will upset any Protestants we have listening, because they've got other Protestants I've told it to get very upset. But it's fine. It can just be my experience, but. The Catholic Church is so much like the depth of what's going on. It's so much deeper. Like, it's an ocean compared to a thimble or compared to a bathtub, of what being a Christian is and what worship is like. And I, upon reflection, I think I would attribute a good chunk of that to Catholic Mass revolves around the Eucharist.
Yes.
And Protestant churches revolve around singing and the sermon.
The sermon.
And that's I mean, that's fine. They're different, but the Catholic Church is every week the Catholic Church revolves around a miracle of Christ coming to be with us, and us eating his flesh and drinking his blood and communing with God in that way, as well as some singing in a sermon.
Sure.
And it's profound just in a way. I don't know. I've never had an experience like that in a Catholic, in a Protestant church. I had profound experiences, and I had, like, I came to Christ in the Anglican Church, but just, yeah, it's a bathtub to an ocean, and I feel bad saying it, because it sounds like I'm sort of crapping on Protestant Christianity and saying it's all garbage,
we don't want to offend our fellow brothers in Christ, but I have to agree. One of the things that also is part of my story is, I thought the Protestants I knew were serving me thin soup.
Yeah.
That just wasn't enough. It was right, but it wasn't... It was part of the story, but it wasn't the whole story.
Yeah, it's just... And also, like, I mean, it blows me away. All of the... everything in the Catholic Church just about has meaning and significance, and the way things are done are all... Like, the Mass is done the way it's done. And everything in it is purposeful.
It's done that way, by the way, because of the book of the Apocalypse. What St. John saw them doing in heaven is what we're trying to mimic here on earth.
Okay.
If that doesn't blow your mind, just think about that for a minute.
No, it does. But all of it is significant in a way that I was certainly never taught that in 20 years in Protestant churches.
Right.
But... Yeah, all of the Mass is significant, and all of it goes in a certain direction, and yeah, it's just so. And it's also very. Catholic churches are beautiful. Like, even your local, not like you don't have to go to the basilicas or, things like that to see a beautiful Catholic church. Even the sort of mundane, run of the mill Catholic churches have a beauty and reverence to them that I apologize to the Protestants listening, but the Protestant church in a school gym does not have the beauty and the majesty of a Catholic church. I mean, it can't.
The Protestant churches sometimes have the sanctity and the holiness of simplicity, of getting away from all decoration.
That's
one of the most holy places I've ever been in was the Lutheran church in my grandfather's village. But having said that, the one reason why I became a Catholic, one of the many reasons which I'll be happy to go into, is there was nothing in the Protestant discipline that some Catholic order didn't also do. If you want severity and simplicity like a Puritan, there are Benedictines and Jesuits that live that way already.
Mm.
But if you want statues and festivals and Easter feasts, there are Catholics that have that as well. You know, if you want music and so on. We also have that. So with the Catholics, I just felt I got everything. Let me briefly tell you. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Let me finish on. The other thing is, like, as I was saying, Catholic theology is so deep. I mean, there's no hint of a works-based salvation in it at all that I've encountered.
What does that phrase mean? I don't know what that means.
So you can earn your way to heaven. There's no aspect. There's no aspect of that in Catholic teaching, but I can see why some Protestants are confused, not least because Protestants and Catholics use the word sanctification and justification in opposite ways. You are sanctified when you come to Christ, and then your justification is working that out and becoming a little Christ in the Catholic Church. But Protestants talk about becoming justified and then becoming sanctified, or you are justified and then you become sanctified, instead of becoming sanctified and then being justified. And as a result, if they use the terms the same way, each would be right to point to the other and go heretic, but they don't. It's very frustrating. But
I hope your frustration is soothed somewhat, because I've heard that in recent years, public documents exchanged between the leaders of several churches have basically agreed that their differences are terminological and not fundamental.
Good, because, well, okay, we need to communicate this to more Protestants. But it's also things in the Catholic Church like the rite of reconciliation or confession. It's amazing.
May I say a word about that before I tell you my story?
Sure. Well, I'm happy to wrap my story up there. I have moved to the Catholic Church, and I feel like I have come home, and I am swimming in an ocean I could drown in easily because of its depth. It's amazing, and I would invite all of our Protestant listeners to find some Catholics, talk to them, find faithful ones. Don't find the Church and Easter types. And try it, you'll like it, maybe. But, you know, explore it and don't be hostile towards it, because you'll learn a lot, if nothing else. Anyway, you were going to say? I love confession.
Confession is difficult,
but wonderful.
Let me tell you my confession story last. I'll say my
sure, please, tell us how you ended up in the Catholic Church.
So, after I converted to Christianity, because I had been converted by the prayers of my wife and her Christian Science practitioner, you would think that I would want to be a Christian Scientist, because that's, I actually firmly believe that if you can possibly avoid it, you should not have a mixed marriage. The parents should be of the same denomination, raise the kids in the same way. Otherwise, the children are going to be confused, and they ought not to be, about something so fundamental and so important. Mm. So I really wanted to join her church. But something kept holding me back. And I have to confess that I was quite angry when I first was converted to Christianity, because it was like being an orphan. I was like an orphan on death row. I thought I was going to die. I thought I was a mortal being. And I found out I was not. I found out I was immortal, like all people are. And so I break out of the prison yard, and I'm free on the street. And a voice says, "Your parents are alive." And I go, "Yay, I'm not an orphan. I'm not alone in this universe. Where are my parents?" And then a voice says, "They're divorced. You have to decide which one to cleave to so you can spurn the other one, because the Christians who all believe in the God of love quarreled and cannot get along. They decided it was better to split the church in half than to try to be together in love and despite their differences." I said, "Are you kidding me, Christians? Why did you do such a stupid thing?" So I was mad at the Christians, but I said, "Okay, I've got to decide where to go." And because I had, if you remember my first part of my story, I had already come to the conclusion that divorce was impermissible. It was not logical. You can't give your word that you're going to love someone forever and then go back on that. Okay? Mm-hmm. The mere possibility that you can do that for any reason other than fornication introduces an element of uncertainty that is impermissible for raising children. Okay? It's just a fact. So I said, okay, the Anglicans are out. Any church that permits divorce, I cannot believe, is truly following Christ. And here's why. I read the Bible, first time in my atheist life. Your Christ speaks in riddles and parables, and he's not clear, except in one passage. There's only one thing he says that is completely unambiguous, even in translation, that cannot be mistaken, which is that if you put away your wife, you divorce your wife, and she marries someone else, she's an adulteress. I said, okay, that's absolutely clear. That's written there in black and white, and when Christ said it, also in red. So I couldn't, it wasn't even in the running for me to look at any church that followed the Anglican heresy. Okay? And not because I believed one church or the other. In fact, I was sort of, didn't want to go to the Catholics because I thought they were crazy. Mm. You know, I thought they were too much. Also, contraception. I had, for independent reasons, based purely on logic, having nothing to do with any religious doctrine, believed that the introduction of contraception in this society was detrimental to women, detrimental to the family, detrimental to marriage, and disordered one's natural sexual appetites.
Yep.
Okay? So I said, okay, anyone who's not anti-divorce and anti-contraception is not even in the running for me. So there were very few people left, and at the time, I thought the Greek Orthodox Church was still in the running. I have since found out that they do permit divorce, and so I'm a little sorry that I gave them the benefit of the doubt. Now, I also knew that I was not smart enough of a theologian to go through all the theological disputes that had divided these denominations, and I certainly did not know what the difference was between a Reformed Baptist and a pre-Reformed Baptist and a post-unreformed left-wing whatever, you know, Wesleyan or something. So I said, okay, let's approach this in kind of a lawyerly way, because I'm a lawyer. There's a message from Christ. He gave it to some messengers known as the apostles. The message has been passed down from generation to generation. some people say the message was corrupt and that the real message is something else. Okay? The guys who say the message is corrupt date from either the 1600s or the 1900s. But the guys who say that Christ is the head of their church date from 50 AD. Okay? Date from the first century. So what are the odds that the guys who are... So either the message of Christ was been carried down through time faithfully or not faithfully. If it was carried faithfully, the people who are carrying it would have the same doctrines they have now as they had then.
Hmm.
Okay? The guys who are being unfaithful, who are claiming the first guys messed up the message. You know what I'm saying? It's like a king in a distant country. It sends a message from some messengers, and by the time the three messengers get to you, they each accuse the other one of having messed up the message. So you have to decide based on the message who's telling the truth. And I realized, well, I can't join any church that is not being guided by the Holy Spirit, and I don't think any church that allows for divorce or homosexuality or priestesses or anything else. Those are clearly human innovations, because no Protestant church agreed that contraception was licit until 1930. And we're talking about a religion that's 2,000 years old, or if the Christian claim that we are part of the Jewish heritage is correct, it's as old as time. It's as old as the Bronze Age. Okay? So then I looked at the idea of what was or what was not canonical in the Bible. Because one of the groups said that the canon of the Bible is all you need to do to be Christian. But they also had removed books from the Bible. Okay? Mm-hmm. But the canonicity of the Bible is from the 5th century. And the books they removed... And some of the doctrines they accepted, like the Nicene Creed, is older than that.
Hmm.
Reverence to Mary is older than the canonicity of the Bible.
250 AD is the oldest known prayer to Mary.
Okay. So, and the nowhere in the Bible or in the traditions of the church or anywhere else does any Christian say that if your bishop is bad, you have the right to start your own church. Christ did not give... Christ did not grant the apostles the power to start churches of their own when they quarreled with each other. That's not a Christian notion. That's a American Revolution notion. That's the notion that if the king betrays the law of God, then you can overthrow the king and set up a republic. You have that right from God. But God didn't say you have the right, if you're disagreeing with my ministers I've placed over you, to overthrow them and worship me in some fashion that you find nice, based on your own human wisdom. Okay? And then I said, well, wait a minute. Did Martin Luther actually perform miracles? Did he cure the sick? Did he raise the dead? Because the leader of the Catholic Church did, as did his apostles.
Mm.
And I said, well, no, he was a Catholic himself, and he had certain theological problems with his leadership. So then I looked into the idea that you could learn Christianity just from the Bible without the surrounding tradition. That, even before I was a Christian, even when I was an atheist, I thought that was illogical. Only the tradition tells you the Bible is holy. Okay? It doesn't have any authority on its own. It's just not a book. It's not a book that fell out of the sky. It was a book that was written by a group of people. And that group of people must have the divine mandate, otherwise the Bible can't have the divine mandate.
Yep.
And certainly nobody in the 16th century has the right to throw pieces out of the Bible and throw them away. Now, when I talked to my Protestant friends about this, they said, oh, no, we didn't throw those books away. They never were in there to begin with. I'm sorry, that's just not historically accurate. That's just a falsehood.
Yep.
Well, then I ran into something very odd indeed. Back when I was an atheist, I said a lot of things about the Christians that were just not true. I asserted Christians believed things they didn't believe or said things they didn't say, hadn't said. Mm. I asserted they started wars they hadn't started, for example. But now that I was a Christian, I began to see the atheists doing the same thing to the... I began to see the Protestants doing the same thing to the Catholics that the atheists did to the Protestants. And it was the same arguments offered in the same way.
It's a shocking realization, isn't it?
This could be just the Catholics I met and just the Protestants I met. It may just be a coincidence. In my case, it may just be a coincidence that the Protestants I met were not well learned in the history and that the Catholics were. But no Catholic I met was unaware of what the doctrine of justification by works alone was, or the doctrine of sola scriptura was. None of them said that the Protestants were teaching a doctrine the Protestants don't teach. Okay? Mm. But all of the Protestants said the Catholics teach doctrines or had habits or had behaviors or had disciplines that they did not have. Now, usually there were some subtle differences. We do revere Mary, we Catholics, you know. Now, here's the other factor. My approach was very different from yours because I was an atheist. To me, if you're outside the entire solar system and you're approaching the sun, Pluto is just as close as Earth is to you because you're coming toward all the planets together, okay? Only after you pass Mars is Pluto to one side of you and Earth to the other side.
Well,
so only once I became a Christian did I have to decide what the difference was between the Christians, because the differences, I hate to say it, are minor. And I honestly believe heaven would prefer us not to quarrel, okay?
I push back against that. I don't think the difference between Protestants is minor at all.
Compared to atheism?
Oh, yes, compared to atheism, yes.
Right.
It's relatively minor.
Do you believe in one God? Do you believe in one God? Both of them?
Sure, but...
Okay, that cuts out 90% of the differences between Christianity and the religion.
But
do you believe
almost...
he's the creator of heaven and earth? So, no, yes. I'm not going to even go let you push back on this. You're not an atheist. You don't know.
No, wait. But I would note, you could say the same thing about Islam and Christianity versus atheism. Like,
Islam is closer to Christianity than atheism is. Islam is a heresy. It's very close.
Of course.
They adopted all. So, yes, they are close.
But it's more...
Compared to atheism? Yes, absolutely they are.
But Hinduism is closer to Christianity than atheism is to Christianity. Like, I mean...
Yes.
Atheism is just a different universe.
I was coming from the moon, and from the moon, the Eastern Hemisphere and the Western Hemisphere are in the same spot, as is North and South America.
I agree. No,
as
I understand,
is New York
I understand
and Connecticut.
What you're saying. I understand
That's
what
all
you're saying.
I meant. That's
Sorry,
all I
my
meant.
Apologies.
So you can't push back on that. compared to from my point of view,
yeah,
where I was
enough.
Coming from, you guys are Siamese twins, okay?
That's fair.
But there was a difference, and thanks to your quarreling with each other, I had to make a decision, okay, as to where to go to pray. Now, my wife was very understanding about this, and I do not understand why she was understanding about this, because her church healed me, performed a miracle, okay? Mm. I had let her use the Christian Science methods to pray for our children and heal our children when they were sick. And it worked more often than taking them to a doctor did. I had no doubts about their doctrines, about their practices. I just thought it was thin soup. I thought there was too much of the founder of the religion and not enough about Christ, even though they talk about Christ as much as any Christians do. And the same thing was true of my Lutheranism from my childhood. In Lutheran church, they talked about Lutheran more often than they should, because he's their founder. Okay? And so on for all my other Protestant friends and brethren. They didn't have Christ as the soul and summit, as the head of their church. And some of them, and I hate to say this, some of them seemed to me like they were spiritually dead, like the Holy Ghost was not in their church. Now, the Catholics, on the other hand, who, I have to say, looked like a terrible and corrupt organization that's done a lot of bad things in history, including, you know, diddling with children and other things that are just outrageous.
Mm.
Not even when the Pope was a Borgia Pope who had a mistress did he say, oh, and by the way, God says it's okay to do this. They never changed their doctrine. They don't have the authority to change their doctrine. Okay?
Hmm.
They also didn't lock up their books in the Middle Ages to prevent the parishioners from reading them. That was a lie. Okay? They also did print Bibles in the vernacular before the Protestant Reformation. That's also a lie. They also didn't say that you could get into heaven by paying money. That's also a lie.
Yep.
Okay. And on and on and on. And I think, okay, you don't shoot blanks if you have ammo. If my Protestant brothers had a good reason to say that the Catholicism was wicked or wrong, they would tell me what it is. Now, as an atheist, as an ex-atheist, I had no problem. To this day, I do not understand the enmity toward Mary. She's the mother of Christ. Okay, I met her. She's a perfect woman. I'll do anything to see her again. I'll do anything I have to do to get into heaven so I can talk to her again. There's no way that a Christian should utter any word of enmity toward that woman. Okay, mm-hmm. And to say, oh well, if you show her respect, you're taking respect away from God. I go, the only reason why I respect her is because of God. Are you out of your mind? That's like saying I can't love my wife unless I also love God. I will pick God over my wife if the two ever come in conflict. But that's insane.
Okay? So I've never understood it. It seems to me like it's a psychopathology that comes out of the German mind, that Luther had some psychological problems. And I apologize to my Lutheran brethren, but I did used to be Lutheran.
Luther liked Mary. I think it's come from Calvin, but anyway.
I apologize to Luther then. I should not be so venomous with my tongue about my fellow brother in Christ.
He was happy to call her the Mother of God, and that's thing. It's more of a Calvin thing, I think.
I hope to embrace him in heaven as we sit down to the Feast of the Lamb, when all these divisions will be forgotten. Okay.
Agreed.
But I still had to pick a church to go to. So one of the things I did is I went through a history of the heresies of the 1st through 10th centuries,
mm-hmm.
and they all sounded like the same kind of thing that modern heretics say. It just looked to me like the idea of a heresy is an idea where you take an organic body of knowledge and lore, or an organic tradition, and you say, this part is paramount and the other parts are of lesser importance or no importance. Okay?
Yeah.
And that looked to me like what the people who broke away from the Catholic Church were doing. Now, I will not say that about the break between the Orthodox Church and the Catholic Church, the Eastern and Western churches.
That was different.
Because that, to me, looks like it was mostly political, and very little of it was doctrinal.
Yeah, I agree.
Now, I also had a rather bizarre approach. I was not picking a church based on what would make me feel good or what would be nice for my family. If I had been concerned with my family, I would have gone to my wife's church, and they would have kept everything in the family, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I couldn't. I couldn't, because it wasn't enough. It wasn't the whole... It didn't give me the entire Western world for 2,000 years. It gave me... I mean, imagine if you became a Mormon. Mormons are... All the Mormons I meet are nice guys. All the Mormons I meet are good, sound, moral people who believe in God.
Mm-hmm.
But if you were Mormon, you could only read books that were 100 years old or less. Because that's where the Book of Mormon comes from. You don't have the tradition. You don't have the richness. You don't, and you're not where it comes from. It comes from somewhere else. Now, this happened to me when I was talking to a Mormon. He said that Jesus Christ was a Christian, as were the apostles. But when John was assumed into heaven, when John died in about the year AD 100, there were no Christians on earth until Joseph Smith. None of them go to heaven. None of their sacraments are valid. None of the things they taught were correct teachings. So all of history is blank. And God was just waiting for Joseph Smith. Now, of course, God works in mysterious ways. That could have been the case. But where did Joseph Smith get his ideas from? Well, he got them from the church. As did all of the Protestant reformers. They got their ideas from the church that they were trying to reform because they said it had grown corrupt.
Hmm.
But no Protestant I ever spoke to could tell me when the church got corrupt. And none of them picked a date before the Bible was canonically decided.
Because
they all agreed on the Bible.
Yeah, I found the same thing. I
But that date, there were already bishops by the first century. So you can't get rid of bishops, you know. There was already the sacraments by the first and second century, so you can't get rid of that stuff either. There was already apostolic succession. So you can't start a church without apostolic succession. At least the Greek Orthodox have that. They can say generation by generation where their doctrine comes from.
Oh, I got into an argument with a friend of mine because he was insisting the Catholic Church was all right when it produced the Bible to some degree, although he backpedaled on that when I went, well, yeah, but you get very upset at the Hail Mary, the first prayers to Mary for 250 AD. So when does this corruption set in? Because those prayers predate the doctrine of, well, the ratification of the doctrine of the Trinity at Nicaea.
Right.
So.
Now, I will say that Mormons are a little better off because Mormons are not Trinitarians. But any Trinitarian, if you accept the findings of the Nicene Council, you have to tell me the reason why you reject the findings of the Council of Trieste, you know, or the Council of Trent, or the Council, or in the other councils.
Well,
okay?
They were later. I mean.
And none of. Oh, yeah, they were later. Okay, fine. Well, that's not a legally legitimate argument.
That would be the argument, though.
It's not legally legitimate.
The church was corrupt by then. I've had this conversation. that is the answer you'll get.
But it's not a legally legitimate argument. It still doesn't detract from the authority that you're still sawing off the branch you're sitting on. You have to rest on the authority of the church in order to reform the church.
Yeah. Why is one authoritative and the other? you seem very they seem very happy to pick and choose what they regard as authoritative.
Right.
It seems to be the authority is, this is probably too harsh, but it seems the authority is, they are the authority deciding what counts
right.
and what doesn't.
Now, once you say that the King of England is the Pope and gets to decide doctrinal matters for all the churchgoers in his land, or you say you are the Pope and you get to decide doctrinal matters, you're claiming something the Pope doesn't claim. Because the Pope doesn't say he decides doctrinal matters. He says he passes them along.
Mm.
Okay? He just says he's carrying a message, not that he's making stuff up. At most, they can say, the Catholics say that as the doctrines organically grow, they have to clarify certain things that otherwise were puzzlements, like the doctrine of the Trinity or the doctrine of the Incarnation.
Mm-hmm.
Now, so, but my approach was almost entirely intellectual because, as a lawyer, I wanted to be in a church that taught the right thing, even if the church itself, I mean, Joe Biden's a Catholic and so is Nancy Pelosi. And these are wicked, wicked people. Okay. There's no question. And there's certain of the popes in the Middle Ages were wicked men.
Yep.
Absolutely. Yep. Okay. Now I'm not that good. I mean, Joe Biden has believed in Christ his whole life and I only believed recently. So he might be in heaven higher than me. As startling as that sounds to say. Because if he gets on his knees and begs repentance for killing babies, you know, if he turns his back on wokeness, he could be saved.
Of course,
he puts ashes on his head on Ash Wednesday. He knows how to be humble. So I mean, keep in mind, this is a politically guy I disagree with as vehemently as you possibly can. I mean, I regard him as comically wicked, but compared to me as an atheist, I'm not gonna judge. I judge no man. Okay, I'm sorry. I judge no man. But I had to pick a church based on what was intellectually satisfying to my sense of right and wrong. And it looked to me like the newer churches couldn't claim that they had authority independent of the older churches. Because if they did claim that every individual, just acting on his own authority, gets to decide the substance and the matter of Christian doctrine, then all that will happen is you will get churches that will subdivide and subdivide again. Which is, in fact, what happened.
Mm.
Now, if those subdivided churches were all vehemently loyal to the core teachings of the Christian faith, I would cast no doubts on them, and I would say no negative word about them. But they don't, so I can't go there. Okay? They don't preach against divorce. They don't preach against contraception. They don't preach against abortion. Some do. But some of them have homosexual priestesses and claim to be Christian.
Mm.
Okay? So there's one church, no matter how corrupt or wicked it was, that never changed its stance. And it claims that it is guided by the Holy Spirit, not that it's guided by the prayers of its founder. Okay? The Catholic Church makes a different claim about itself than any other church except perhaps the Greek Orthodox. So, what happened was my wife, who was much more generous to me than she should be, instead of insisting that I keep faith with the family and join her denomination, said, everyone on your blog is Catholic. All these people who talk to you are Catholic. All the people you agree with are Catholic. You think like them, you know? Mm. And maybe you're just not advanced enough to be a Christian scientist. Yes, you poor pathetic. She didn't actually say it, but she should have. So I went to RCIA, and I became great friends with the father there because he was funny and witty and wise. And I found out that everything I had been told about the Catholic Church was a distortion.
I know, okay. Right?
And I went to my first confession. Now, I had been baptized as a child as Lutheran, so I did not need to be re-baptized or anything.
No, neither did I. Yep.
When I went to my first confession, I poured out 40 years of filth and blasphemy and sin and lust and pride and everything else. The father said, say three Hail Marys. I said, wait, there's no whipping involved? There's no being bound in chains until they fall off by themselves? He said, a little leaven will lift the whole loaf. And I thought, and I should say, when he said the words, when he said the actual words calling down the power of Christ, and for those of you who are Protestants, no priest claims to have the ability to forgive sins. It's a power that they get in the person of Christ acting in his stead because he asked them to do that for him in his name. Okay? And nothing prevents you from getting on your knees and praying to God and asking for forgiveness themselves. There's nothing in our sacraments that you have to do that you can't, that takes away from any other form of worship. Okay, we have everything you have and more. You've given stuff up that you should not have given up, that helps you. that's an aid to your prayer life, that's an aid to your spiritual life, that's an aid to your growth, that helps you see God, that helps you take God inside your body so that you go inside his body. I felt it when I got forgiven. I felt that same sensation I had when the Holy Spirit first entered me. Okay? It was undeniable. It was absolutely pure. And for at least, you know, an hour, I was free from sin. It was like having your clothes washed whiter than any fuller on earth can wash them.
Mm-hmm.
And it was supernatural. And these supernatural events happen to me all the time when I go to Catholic Church. Okay? There's a miracle once a week.
Yep.
So, good golly, Miss Molly, if they're not the church, the chances that Joseph Smith could be right, I just don't think is, I'm not willing to bet on it. But if I'm wrong, once we get to heaven, I will embrace everyone I have doubted as a brother, and I will say, I was wrong. But I was wrong sincerely, and I was not doing it out of pride or anything else. I thought that this was the church. Now, I have to admit that the Greek Orthodox have a very good claim to being the original church, too. They have the same pedigree. But I am a man of the West, and I wanted to be a member of the same church as Robin Hood and King Arthur and the people who fought at Lepanto and the Crusaders in the Middle Ages and all the other Western traditional figures. That was then. King Arthur was a Catholic.
Yep.
Okay? So I'd rather be with them than anywhere else.
No, I understand. Sorry, I was just going to say, you keep saying Greek Orthodox, but I think you just mean generally Eastern Orthodox. The Greek Orthodox is one of the churches that's part of the Eastern Orthodox churches.
There are a variety of Eastern churches, and there's at least 10 of them, and I was not going to recite all of them.
No, I but just the Greek would have Orthodox said Eastern
is
Orthodox.
Centered, the Greek Orthodox, however, is centered at the Byzantium.
Fair
so
enough.
Their claim, I think, is better than the Russian Orthodox to be clearly part of the heraldry of the original founding apostles.
My understanding is all of the Eastern Orthodox churches are in communion, so they wouldn't regard themselves as different branches of Christianity. They're all Orthodox churches. My understanding is that would be like there's an Anglican church in Gosford and there's an Anglican church in Strathfield, but these are all Anglican churches. It's just they're in different locales. So that's my understanding. I could be mistaken. Go on.
I will accept the correction with humility. The reason why I was saying Greek Orthodox rather than just Orthodox is because my church is also Orthodox and their churches are also Catholic, which just is a word that means universal.
Yeah, okay, I agree.
So
I agree. No, I agree.
I was only to be unambiguous.
That's
but right. I honestly didn't look into the other Orthodox churches when I was looking around. I was talking about who I was looking at.
No, it's all you good, know? But someone will comment to that effect. So that was all.
Okay, they'll be right, but it will be a trivial point.
It's okay. It's fine. It's fine. Actually, I was amused. You mentioned just at the end, you see miracles all the time in the Catholic Church. A Protestant friend asked me, which I thought
being
was hilarious.
I'm being slightly sly. I consider the Eucharist to be a miracle because the bread turns into the flesh of Christ.
Well, no, this is what I said. But she asked, is the Catholic Church cessationist? Like, have the miracles ended with the time of the apostles and things like that, with exceptions? And I sort of thought about it, and I thought, no, the Catholic Church is the least cessationist church on the planet. We have miracles every day of the week in every church, in every Catholic church in the world. Every time Mass is celebrated, that's a miracle.
Let me just say that you can go to Lourdes and pray for healing, and you'll be healed. You can go to Mexico and look at the tilde of Juan Valdez, whatever his name was, that has an image of Our Lady on it. And scientists have studied it, and they cannot explain it. You can go look at the Shroud of Turin, okay? Scientists have looked at it. They can't explain it, okay? In fact, the one time the scientists said, oh, the Shroud of Turin is fake. We've radiocarbon dated a small corner, and it only dates from the 15th century. It turns out that there was a corner that was broken and repaired, and the seamstresses in the 15th century were so cunning in their needlework that modern scientists couldn't see it, okay? Now, that if that's not a miracle, don't tell me what is. There was a Marian apparition earlier this year in Egypt? It happens all the time. The dancing sun at Fatima.
It's okay. Just amazing. It's amazing. Like, the Catholic Church is the least cessationist church on the planet, bar none.
Right. Right. No, no, you can't say bar none. I have to speak up on behalf of the Christian Scientists. They have weekly volumes of testimonies of their miracles, usually attested to also by a doctor or some other witness, that they've collected for the last 100 years. And I, as I've said several times in this broadcast, I almost never have to take my children to a doctor because the Christian Science methodology, which is praying to God, works, okay? And someone busted my chops online saying, oh, no, the Christian Scientists can't pray to God because they're not Christian. And I was like, look, it's in the name, buddy. I mean, I'm sorry. There's nothing in the doctrine, either of Catholics or Protestants, that says when someone who has different opinions about how the universe works prays to God and calls him by name and prays to Christ and calls him by name, that God will not grant his power to them. God will not bestow blessings on him. Okay, It does happen. I'm sorry. Prayer works.
Yeah, I agree. Well, on that note, maybe we should wrap this up because we've gone a little long.
We have gone long, but I want to say one last thing.
Sure,
not only
please.
Does prayer works, but I am so much happier being a Christian than I was an atheist.
Yes.
As an atheist, I always had a chip on my shoulder. I was always so proud and arrogant with my nose in the air. Now, I'm still proud and arrogant, but I have a lot more fun trying to be humble and failing. I'm aware of my sins now, which is disgusting, but that actually makes me a lot happier than being unaware of them and thinking I was just the cat's pajamas. I found friends everywhere. I'm a member of a group that I was never a member of before. I've got friends in the 5th century. Okay, I St. Justin Martyr is my hero. I named myself after him after I got confirmed, because he's the patron saint of philosophers. Okay, and he was basically talked into religion. The thing that didn't happen to me as a philosopher, I was not philosophically inclined. And the cathedrals are so beautiful, and so much of the West is tied into Catholicism. European history doesn't even make sense unless you understand Christendom, unless you understand the Catholic Church.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So I'm happy to be home. I feel... everything I've always liked in science fiction and fantasy stories, that sense of wonder, that sense of adventure, that sense that you were a knight on a holy crusade, that's now real in my life. Okay? The idea that there was something mysterious behind the appearances of the world, a secret power, okay, that's it, which is in all the stories I read. Well, that's true. The secret power is God, and he decided to pull a Saul of Tarsus on me. So he's got a sense of humor. He's scary as all get out. Don't get me wrong. You should be God-fearing. But if you fear God, you will not fear man, and that will make your life a lot easier.
Mm. Well, that seems like a good place to end. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. We've opened a Substack, and we've made a few changes for Season 2. We'll be having guests on as well. Like, share, and subscribe. And if you'd like to support us through Substack, give us a look, and we would be most appreciative. Thank you, everybody. Thanks for joining me, John.
Thank you, and amen.
Amen.